Well, folks, on Thursday, I had the opportunity to have a conversation with Elon Musk, obviously the founder of SpaceX and Tesla, the richest man on planet Earth, and also the owner and the person running X, which is Twitter. And Elon and I had a long conversation about anti-Semitism on the site, because Elon has gotten into this fractious battle with the Anti-Defamation League. Here's what it sounded like.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. So glad you could join us here. I'm Ben Shapiro. I'd first like to thank everybody for being here. I'd like to thank my co-host, Rabbi Dr. Ari Lam. He's the CEO of B'nai Tzion. It's an organization dedicated to promoting Israel and Judaism through new media. And of course, we all want to thank Elon Musk, who asked if we could come together for what's sure to be a fascinating and meaningful conversation. One of the things that nobody can deny about Elon is that he's willing to speak publicly on pretty much everything, and tonight is no exception. Now, most of you have probably seen by now that Elon Musk is at war with the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL. It's a group that was once dedicated to fighting anti-Semitism in nonpartisan fashion. Of late, they've become significantly more partisan in their progressive politics, to say the least. Like a lot of progressive interest groups, the ADL would love more controls on dissemination of speech at X. They, like a lot of other organizations, are doing so by pressuring advertisers to move their dollars away from the platform. Well, a few weeks ago, Musk posted on X saying that the ADL has been trying to kill his platform, falsely accusing him of being anti-Semitic. They said that if this continues, he said that he will have no choice but to file a defamation suit against them, which is obviously pretty funny considering it's the Anti-Defamation League. Now, as I said on my show when this was unfolding, Elon happens to be right on the merits here. The legacy media, multinational institutions, left-wing interest groups, they have been converging on Elon-esque as a supposed source of rising hate speech, and they've been doing so in really opportunistic fashion from pretty much every angle. Until Musk took over X, they were largely running things in terms of which messages to silence or quash. These institutions are generally in favor of more censorship, more restrictions on speech. That censorship has often been used to shut down not merely material we all agree is gross or violent or despicable, but to shut down a bunch of material that doesn't actually meet with approved narratives, whether we're talking about COVID or transgenderism or foreign policy. These organizations get what they want at a lot of other platforms like YouTube and Facebook, but they're not getting it at X, which is one of the reasons why they're very, very angry. So, for the first part of this conversation, Elon Musk and I are going to discuss what it takes to preserve free speech while battling activist third parties, pushing censorship, dictating what is considered, quote unquote, brand safe for advertisers. And then, in the second half of this conversation, Rabbi Dr. Lam is going to lead a discussion about how the ADL and anti-Semitism affect speech issues, discuss Elon's feelings and experiences regarding Judaism more broadly, and then we'll open it up to some questions from a few esteemed leaders in the Jewish community. So, that's enough from me. Without further ado, Elon, welcome to your own website. Really appreciate it. Why don't we jump into
I just wanted to say that your preamble was spot on. I couldn't have said it better myself. That is exactly the situation. It's absurd. First of all, we've actually been tracking the hate speech views, anti-Semitic or otherwise, they've gone down since the acquisition, objectively. And we've had multiple third parties, unrelated to us, do their own analysis with a full data dump, and they've concluded the same thing. So that's also important. It's important just start off with some important facts. And if someone else is looking at the view counts X, FK, Twitter, and has evidence to the contrary, I'd love to know what that is. But absurd to be accused of something when all the evidence points in the other direction. And my entire life story is, in fact, pro-Semitic. And we had Walter Isaacson, who I believe is Jewish, spend 2 years with me. You know, we had complete access to everything. Really, there was like no alt guard, nothing. He didn't even have to clear with me who he talked to beforehand. And I think he might, he's a pretty smart guy. He might have picked on it. Might have figured it out, if I was anti-Semitic. It's just freaking absurd. And like a little sort of, little tidbits. I actually went to Hebrew preschool, Rachel Spiro, in South Africa when I was a kid. Now, I don't know if I'm sort of, genetically Jewish or what, but maybe somewhere. I would say I'm aspirationally Jewish. Let me put it that way.
Most of us Jews would say, don't aspire so hard. It's not that fabulous, but
I'll tell you some other crazy stuff, because like my name, Elon, is actually a very sort of Israeli name.
For sure.
It's like being called Bob in Israel. And then I actually my father took me to Israel when I was 13, which was like a wow. Okay, I mean, basically, you put this backpack together, it's like pretty Jewish adjacent. I went to Israel, went to the wall, went to Masada. I've been to Masada twice. It's like, I don't know if many people can say that. I wouldn't say my Hama Nagila is the best. It's a little rusty, but it's pretty good.
So, Elon, at some point, we just wish to do around. I want to ask you a couple of questions definitionally. So first, I would like to ask you sort of your definition of what free speech is supposed to look like on the platform absent pressure. So obviously, you've done a lot in terms of free speech. You've personally intervened in cases like for our outlet, What Is a Woman, to get rid of restrictions on speech.
Yeah.
But what exactly should speech look like, especially in sort of gray areas? So we all sort of agree on no child abuse, no terrorism, no threats of violence, no incitement. When it gets to things like hate speech, which has a variable definition, where do you draw the line?
No, I think that's a very interesting question and a difficult to solve. It's not one with a very easy answer, especially with regard to the exact line of what is or isn't, hate speech. Because one person's hate speech is another person's free speech much of the time. I think we sort of start with the rather obvious slurs and things that are like no brainers, and then beyond that, the general principle, overarching principle, is to operate according to the laws of the country that we are in. That's the general principle, to be clear. So I think it's the right principle. So in the US, we're able to be much more free with speech. In some other parts of the world, less so, where we have the choice of either providing the X platform or it being shut off or throttled. But I do believe also generally, like if there is someone harboring hate that hate is based on sort of incorrect assumptions or bad knowledge, the best way to combat that hate is to hear it and then say why it's not true, as opposed to somebody harboring secret anti-Semitism or some other form of hatred, never actually hearing the counterpoints as to why what they believe is potentially false, is false. Then you have all this hidden anti-Semitism, you name it. I think actually it often is better that somebody says something and then gets dunked on, frankly, or is corrected.
It's
one of the things I like about the United States, we need to make sure this remains the case. But in the United States, we for the most part wash our laundry in public. So you can sort of see the dirty laundry for the most part, and we need to keep it that way. And so as long as it may appear that something is bad, but actually everyone else has way more dirty laundry. They just don't show you, it's hidden,
So when we talk about anti-Semitism, for example, appearing on Twitter, you mentioned things like slurs or incitement to violence, or for example, one of the textbook pieces of definition of anti-Semitism is statements that the state of Israel should be obliterated, things like that. But when it gets to, if that stuff is out there, you basically have three choices now. One is that you ban it. Two is that you limit its reach. You've talked about freedom of speech versus freedom of reach, and I kind of want to drill down with you what that means. And then third is demonetization. And I wanted to ask you, what standards of demonetization ought to be used? So I suppose that it's the latter two parts that would be amazing in terms of clarity, would be the freedom of speech, not reach, and demonetization.
Yeah. Well, first of all, on the, just going in backwards order, but demonetization, I should preface this by saying, we do lots of dumb things, but these dumb things, as the saying goes, one should not attribute to malice, that which easily can be explained by incompetence. So we do lots of foolish things, but we want to fix that. And a bunch of these foolish things have been in place for a decade, and you know, I can't fix them all at once, but we are fixing them. So for example, there's a list, I think Chaya Raichik was pointing out, like yes. testing the system. You know, and I've looked at this list, and it's some of the terms on the list, I'm like, look, if that's a bad word, I'm clearly, I need to look up, get Urban Dictionary or something, you know, because that one I didn't realize was a bad word. So this list needs to be trimmed. That's the sort of not safe for advertising list. Now, advertisers, you know, can be rather skittish, you know, especially when you look at something like the Edge platform, which is only 1% of the advertising market, optimistically. It's pretty easy if you've got like a, you know, if 1% of your ad budget just has too much hair on it, it's like not worth it, you know? It's easy to just say like, well, for a lot of advertisers out there, well, this is more pain than gain. The advertisers are very skittish. Like one sort of article in a sort of medium-sized newspaper is enough to, sometimes scare off advertisers from a platform. It doesn't take much, is what I'm saying. A loud noise in the room could scare advertisers. You know, I mean, it's they're not sort of bold as brass. Now,
for sure. Strategically speaking, what do you do about that? Obviously, we've had experiences with organizations like the Global Alliance for Responsible Media that have tried to leverage advertisers against, for example, our platform. I know that those same groups are meeting with X, trying to determine quote unquote advertising standards. How do you maintain free speech principles in the face of attempts to do what the ADL or GARM have been attempting to do, sort of control what sort of speech is allowed?
Yeah, well, we're really trying to hew close to the law in the country, like in the United States to other countries. So it's sort of like, that's our general principle. If we're banning things entirely, if something is illegal, well, it's legal, and that needs to be banned or suspended or whatever, cut up. Fairly obvious. Just to continue on the advertising front, though, we right now sort of have a binary on-off switch, which is silly, because there is a spectrum of advertiser bravery, or advertisers not being sensitive to things that actually don't matter. So I think we should have really degrees of advertiser safety, kind of like you've got, movies. You don't have like go, no go for movies. You've got like sort of, all ages, PG-13, your sort of R and X and all that sort of stuff. Like X-rated scenarios. This media is X-rated. So that if you're an advertiser, you can say, and with a cost tier where the sort of safest, so-called, in quotes, advertisers who want the safest sort of situation can have that, but then you can just go all the way up to even advertising next to sort of not safe for work stuff, even if it's like something pretty spicy, as an advertiser, you should be able to say, well, I don't mind, that's fine, because that's actually going to cost less, that will cost less per impression or ultimately per sale of whatever they're trying to sell, because it's like that real estate is not as sought after, and so advertisers really should be able to pick, like, maybe I don't know, within four or five gradations what they consider to be okay instead of like just good bad, and I could say for example, like for Starlink advertising, for the SpaceX Starlink satellite network, I would just say, go, we'll take it all, including the NSFW. Fine, no problem. Who cares? It's really that'll be a higher return than having all these stringent requirements. So yeah, and then for the actual line on sort of where it's more dubious. It's legal, but it's still hateful. The way we're trying to deal with this right now is algorithmically, which is that if we show people content that makes them want to leave the system, and if they're getting sort of hammered with hate speech, probably they will not like that. Now, you know, so the algorithm is supposed to be showing posts on the X system that are interesting, informative, funny, and otherwise useful to people on the system. Now, it doesn't always succeed at that, but that is the goal. Obviously, if we just hammer people with hate, they're going to leave the platform, and that's, you know, we'll lose that sort of customer, I guess. That's sort of the basic situation. As I mentioned, the view count, where you say, like, okay, how many HP views have there been pre and post Twitter, pre and post the acquisition? They've dropped by at least 30%, and I think they've continued to decline. Just because we've made the algorithm better. So
more transparent. I mean, certainly you've gotten rid of a lot of the bots. That's helped an enormous amount. I remember that the same ADL that's targeting you now declared me the single greatest recipient online of anti-Semitism in 2016. And I will say that has dropped markedly since 2016. And including after you took over X. I did want to ask you, Elon, about, you know, one of the issues that's coming up, you know, that generally goes to free speech. And you have this, as I mentioned at the top, combination of both private organizations, some of which fundraise, some of which make money off of calling for censorship, and governments that are putting pressure on social media platforms in order to do the work that they really are not legally allowed to do, certainly in the United States.
Yeah.
How can you stand up and what sort of pledges can you make to users of Twitter with regard to these sort of backdoor pressure attempts by both advertisers? I mean, I think that you're sort of gradated sphere, it helps. It's not going to totally overcome, obviously, the power of great consortiums of advertisers who decide that they are, for example, only going to check the box on safe advertising. And they're not going to broaden out the spectrum, but price differentials hopefully will make a difference there. But when it comes to government, what do you do?
Our policy is to resist with any attempts to get censorship to the maximum degree allowed by law. In the U.S., by far the biggest pressure comes from essentially, I say fairly far left activist groups. And they tend to act as sort of coalitions. Like there's a whole bunch of them, and they'll they'll write the 16 activist groups, So like they'll move as a pack, but. What they're trying to do there is really impose left, often extremely far left values on X and other platforms under the guise of hate speech, but it is in fact a matter of politics or of really views that would, I think, the general public would consider to be somewhere between left, very left, and sort of far left and extreme left. So it's like really, it's really disturbing, frankly. You've been the they've attacked you. You've been a target many times. The thing you mentioned, which is like, is like for many people, say like they're like, oh, there's all this hate speech, and I said, well, have you seen any? And they're like, well, no, I haven't seen any. Well, okay, then like that BBC reporter where he was like, oh, the platform's filled with hate speech, there's so much hate speech, you can't believe it. And I said, well, name one example, and he couldn't. And I'm like, well, so if there's so much hate speech, you can't name a single example, not even one. What's top of the list? Oh, nothing. It can't even think of anything.
Yeah, the overweening panic is obviously political in nature. I mean, the fact that you're heterodox politically is clearly one of the driving forces here. And that brings me to one final question before I hand it over to Rabbi Lam. And that has to do with some of the other social media platforms. So Russell Brand, who obviously is a super controversial figure, but has also come under, significant accusations with regard to sexual assault, rape, all the rest. He was recently demonetized on YouTube for the accusations that have not even resulted in an arrest as of yet. You know, what do you make of social media platforms demonetizing people for things that they are doing offline that have not resulted in, for example, criminal charges as of yet?
Yeah, I absolutely think we should not. It should be, first of all, I mean, there's two parts to this. Russell Branding, I actually checked, by the way, with some friends of mine who worked closely with him, women that worked closely with him, and they said he was actually a gentleman and had a very nice, and they did not feel, and especially on movie sets, you know, if something's happened on a movie set, news travels fast. People I know said, no, this is not the post. Russell Brand is not a bad guy. And then this separately, even if there some things did happen, there needs to be obviously a conviction here. Not it can't be guilty until proven innocent, because obviously we're just sort of in the witch burning phase here, which just being declared a witch is enough to make you a witch and be burnt. I think this witch burning instinct might be like deep seated, frankly. But we can't have that, you know. It's because you obviously anyone can be accused at any time of false charges, and we can't be destroying their lives on the basis of potentially false accusations. I'm not sure if charges has anyone even filed charges in the Russell Brand case?
My understanding is not at this point. I believe that the police have been soliciting for actual evidence at this point, seeing if they can bring charges, but I don't believe the charges have actually been filed. So, Elon, I want to hand it over to
a layer of outrageous, you know.
It's something I do want to hand over to
he doesn't even have charges, guys. This is crazy. And now Russell has obviously been rattling the cage, of the powers that be. And these alleged accusations from people we don't know, where there's not an actual lawsuit. Why now? You know, because these things happened many, many years ago. Why now? And it's like, it seems like an odd coincidence that it's happening when Russell is really great, gaining traction, questioning a lot of the conventional wisdom. Some may say, oh, well, he's promoting conspiracy theories and whatever, but I think we're running out of conspiracy theories that didn't turn out to be true. So, in fact, if for those out there in the conspiracy theory community, we really need some more material, and what do we got left here? Conspiracy theorists of the world, we please get creative. We need more material.
Well, folks, that was my conversation with Elon Musk, who's, I think, well worth the listen. There are other people who also interviewed Elon. You can listen to the full interview by heading on over to X.
Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.